Coach Sloan. Uncle Bamford.
Hold on, bring it down, bring it down. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinny Eastwood Show. I think it's a real appropriate song. Everyone's asleep, everyone but me, and I feel like I'm doing this all by myself. A person who personifies those very fracking lyrics is the man I've got on for the first hour today. And I had an extensive conversation with this man last night, which I very rarely do with any of my guests. I normally like come in blind and come out swinging. So, his name is Ryan Dawson, otherwise known as Rise to Sense. He's the maker of a couple of documentary films, which... Well, you know how there's a lot of 9/11 conspiracy theories and a lot of 9/11 conspiracy documentaries, and they all kind of, you know, parrot each other and go over the same territory and don't kind of illustrate a whole bunch of things, leave things out, that sort of thing. This guy's actually kind of figured out a lot of that stuff and really gone through intricately, all right? And I say intricately, operatively. And debunk a lot of these mainstream theories about 9/11. So, his name is Ryan Dawson. Welcome to the show, mate.
I'm going to forgive you for calling me at 8 a.m. on a Saturday because that intro was very good.
Yeah, I'm known for my intros.
Now, the whole reason I did a 9/11 film was because the other ones were so bad that I saw. They were just full of disinformation, especially the early ones. I'd had everything written out, and I really didn't want to do a movie. Frankly, I just didn't feel like it. It's a lot of work. And when I'm like, just go read it. But then I figured out there is a large section of the population that just doesn't read, especially something that's like over 90 pages. So I made a 3-hour and 40-minute film. And then I shaved that down to 2 hours because the original one had a lot about the Iraq War in it too. And then I just felt like that's kicking a dead horse now. Everyone knows we were lied to about that. But they didn't back when it started. And so I made a War by Deception and updated just, it every year.
Just to address, it was really funny because the very first comment that I received on my Facebook when I was advertising that you were coming on the show was, hold on, let me see. I'm sure Ryan Dawson won't talk about Israelis and the Mossad agents that were caught and released by the DHS. Could you address that for a moment?
I'm the very first person to talk about 9/11 in Israel and make a movie about it. And the other one since then have been springboarding off of things I've written and things that I've made in film. And I've made, I don't know how, a couple hundred YouTube videos about it. And it wasn't the DHS. It was the FBI and Joint Terrorism Task Force that let the Israelis go. Not just the dancing Israelis that a lot of people know about, but the Israelis caught on the George Washington Bridge in a van packed with the RDX explosives. That's who released them. And Chertoff was later head of the Department of Homeland Security, but that didn't even exist until 2002. They didn't create it yet. They had an office for it, which became that after the Congress passed it officially, but there wasn't even a DHS yet. So they didn't even have their rhetoric wrong.
Now, you said I don't know why anyone Chertoff would write that. You said the name Chertoff. Sounds like somebody who used to work for the KGB.
Yeah, he used to work in the department or the Justice Department. Gosh, I'm so used to not calling it the Injustice Department. But he used to work there, and then he got moved to become the head of the DHS later. But his whole family's messed up. They're all corrupt. And he's a Zionist bastard. His cousin wrote for Popular Mechanics for only one issue that dealt with 9/11 purely to help try and cover it up. I mean, it was a joke how bad. It was just completely horrible, the cover-up. And the whole 9/11 commission was a joke. That was chaired by Lee Hamilton, the same shill they had for the Iran-Contra whitewash. He was still alive, and they brought him in. He wasn't their first pick, though. Their first pick was Henry Kissinger. That looks terrible. He's discredited himself so much with all his killings all over Southeast Asia. And he ended up turning it down. And I don't think it was because it was so obvious Henry Kissinger would cover up anything bad the government had done. It was because he would have had to have revealed some of his partners that he financial partners, and he couldn't do that because he's involved with so many crooks. But his private equity firm, he goes through Triweaver Equity and also Hollinger Inc., which is a media conglomerate in Canada. And on the board is himself and Richard Pearl, who is in the Defense Department, who's probably the worst neocon ever, and James R. Thompson, who was on the 9/11 Commission. So his business partner was still on there. And then Lee Hamilton was the chair. His best friends. Oh, get this. Lee Hamilton was the Democrat for the Iran-Contra. The chair for the Republicans was Dick Cheney. He was the vice president during 9/11.
Yeah, you just can't make this stuff up, bro.
No. It's awful, but I mean, that should have been pointed out in the first few seconds. You know, here, what, Lee Hamilton? This is the guy that whitewashed Iran-Contra. And Iran-Contra is a known conspiracy theory. I mean, they convicted Poindexter of conspiracy. It's officially admitted that that was conspiracy. I mean, that it involved multiple countries and billions of dollars, and they murdered tens of thousands of people. You're talking about Iran and Israel and Nicaragua and the United States. They're all in on it, using the Contras to fight the Sandinistas, to murder all these people, and they use drug money. And I mean, everything from top to bottom, it was a conspiracy. CIA running in guns and drugs, and it all fell apart when a pilot crashed, and they ended up being CIA in a plane full of drugs, you know, and they had to start explaining this. And Ollie North and them, I mean, this is all in the 80s. If you guys are too young to remember this, go look it up. It was a huge thing. It was like Watergate level. I mean, it was a massive scandal. And the same people, because a lot of them just got pardoned. I mean, they were found guilty, and they just got pardoned by the president because Bush's father was in on it. And that was that. And a few more of them got pardoned by Clinton, and only a few went to jail. But they were involved in the 9/11 in the same cover-up, the same people. It's unreal.
Well, I think it's when you go into a job interview, they say, have you got previous experience?
Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah.
There's a man that could be trusted.
Prior to being the vice president and president, George Bush's father was the director of CIA. So, you know, you're never ex-CIA.
Yeah. Apparently, he's one of the very few ex-presidents who still continues to read the daily CIA updates and reports and things like that, which all presidents are entitled to.
I'm sure his son isn't reading anything.
Yeah, I doubt he even reads the warning labels on his Prozac.
No. And he was so embarrassing. He was so embarrassing. Every time Junior went to make a speech in a foreign country or something, I would cringe. He'd mix up analogies. He'd make up words. He'd straight up forget things. I was just hoping, man, I hope the translator is sort of covering for all this. It was so bad.
As somebody living in a foreign country during the Bush administration, I can assure you the translators did not cover it up. In fact, I saw a documentary film that was made called George W. Bushisms. I got a whole documentary just basically of example after example of George W. Bush messing up. God dang, that stuff is funny, man. I mean,
seriously. He's very good for Saturday Night Live and the comedians in the U.S., but he really hurt Americans' reputation in general. I mean, after all the lies and deception he did and the way he behaved, you know, all Americans are just a bunch of overfed, over-medicated retards. So, as an American living overseas, I got to deal with that. Every time I meet somebody from the U.K. or whatever, I got to represent and show that we're not all morons. No, we did not believe that. Actually, the majority of Americans opposed the war in Iraq, protested it, millions in the street and everything. It just wasn't on TV. So it looked like we're all just, yeehaw, go get them towel heads or whatever. And it wasn't like that at all. The only people acting like that would be the Senate.
Yeah. Well, you know, I find it very interesting is that the people that we elect to represent us never seem to actually be like us. Have you noticed that?
Somebody who you vote for is like billionaires and things.
Yeah, I mean, they're as different from the average American as you could possibly get.
It's just, you know, to get elected, you have to be on TV, realistically. I mean, to even know what your name is, you've got to be able to get on TV. And to get on TV, you've either got to be very wealthy already, or you've got to be a puppet of the wealthy, willing to do, you know, willing to rent yourself out to the highest bidder, which is what 99% of our Congress does. And that's the problem, you know. Corporations have figured out, you know, they can use the government as a giant ATM machine to get our tax money or money borrowed from the Fed allocated to themselves, and they don't have to pay the debt. The debt gets pushed on the public. And so it's just become one big rent-a-government. And, you know, TV kills. And, the you know, shows like yours and mine and things on the web are putting some dents in it, but not enough yet. I mean, it's a country of 300 million people, so it's change comes a lot slower than a smaller nation like Egypt or Iceland. You know, it's very hard to organize in a country that size.
Well, you know, what's interesting is that in New Zealand, there's only 4 million people, and there's a couple of radio shows in New Zealand that cover these sort of topics with any form of credibility whatsoever. And they're all one day a week tops, with the exception of mine. And I would be really proud of that, but the reality is I'm actually ashamed. You know, 4 million people, only one person's doing it 5 days a week. Come on.
Well, maybe the one person doing it is so good that they decided, oh, we don't need that one.
Yeah, see, that's sad. That's even worse.
You need some competition, but I don't know what to say. I mean, I guess a lot of it is because it's not – I mean, there's plenty of corruption, but everything New Zealand's doing is pretty small scale compared to the U.S. Or China or something, and they're like not as interested in other countries' politics as their own, maybe. I don't know. But the things that happen affect the whole world, so you should be interested.
Yeah. Well, see, I really am. And my analysis of New Zealand news, I mean, you've imagine you're living in a small town and the news is about a dude who wasn't wearing his bicycle helmet gets injured, or there was a car crash and somebody was sent to a hospital, or there's somebody's cat stuck up a tree. That's actually the big mainstream news in New Zealand.
That's kind of like Japan, because there's so little crime, even though Japan is 120 million people. Like the prefecture I live in hasn't had a murder in 5 years. That's in the entire state. And so that's, you know, when people say, oh, well, Japan has no guns and they have a low crime rate, I'm like, they don't have a crime rate by any kind of weapon. It's like so rare. So some little thing happens, I'm like, this is really on TV? Like, that's what they're talking about? You know, like, not cat in the tree, but a car wreck or something. That would definitely be on the news, because nothing else bad is happening. They have no fear to sell. They talk about these stupid islands between Japan and Korea all the time. I call it the Asia's Chick-fil-A party. It's so extreme over nothing, because there's nothing else. Until 2011, now we've had something with Fukushima, but prior to that, there was no news.
Well, see, even then, I saw this video of a French expat in Tokyo, and he was filming himself, and he was screaming at the camera, you know what they're covering right now when all those radiation's coming down and massive tsunamis and everything like that? You know what's on TV? It turns on the TV. It's a commercial about pizzas.
Yeah.
I just found it so funny. And I don't know how to correct this entire situation. And as far as I'm concerned, it's not my responsibility.
But it was nonstop right after it happened. I mean, it was on every channel 24 hours a day covering
it. Probably would be.
If you had electricity, it was on. But yeah. Eventually, you know, they quit, you know, doing it 24 hours a day and went back to regular programming. Because, I mean, if you do that too long, people are just going to be in a complete panic state. So that you have to eventually bring back the comedians and everything else. And it was like the U.S. in 9/11. It was 24 hours a day coverage of the planes hitting the building over and over and over again. And after a few months, it went back to the regular cop and lawyer shows shooting people on, you know, normal U.S. reality TV trash. But because you just can't cover it forever.
Well, things lose their effect after a while, I think. And I'm wondering, when is 9/11 going to use its effect? Because it's still being used to justify everything, isn't it? Even more than a decade on.
Yeah, it launched the new war on terror, which is a war on a tactic, so you can never win. There's no way to have a decisive battle. There's no country you can go defeat and say, aha, we've won. It's a little bit like the war on communism or the Cold War, which I'm not pro-communist or anything, but that was just an excuse to invade Central and South America, usually, or in Southeast Asia as well. It had nothing to do with communism. And in the brief window between, they would have the war on drugs. They would say, he's a drug dealer, and we'd go bomb Panama. I mean, we invaded Grenada, like they're a threat, a national threat to the United States. And it was all for corporate interest. They always give the public one pretext, communism, terrorists, or whatever. And then there's always more private, more sinister motivations for specific corporations usually. And it's usually about neocolonialism when you're talking about Africa or Central America. But man, look at Africa today. Africa is kind of like France's South America to the U.S. or Eastern Europe to Russia. I mean, they're just routinely invaded and beaten down by Europeans there. And it's neocolonialism. They don't want any country to nationalize their oil or gold or whatever resource they have. They don't, or sell it to China, as in the case of the Sudans. Because it's not that we want the oil, and it's not that we don't want China to have it. Oh, we're hitting the music. You got a commercial?
Yeah.
Dang. I'll have to explain that afterward.
Yeah, right. Hold that thought. Hold that thought. All right. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, at the Vinnie Eastwood Show. .com. You can listen live in the chat room there if you wish. Ryan Dawson, Rise 2 Cents, is my guest. We'll be right back.
Because it's Wednesday, and Wednesday night is the night that we usually make love. It's because it's when everything is just right. There's nothing good on TV. You haven't had your social netball team practice, so you're not too tired. Oh yeah, sounds like it's all on. You say something to me like, I might go to bed, I've got work in the morning. But I know what you mean. You mean, oh yeah, it's business time, it's business time.
It's business, it's business time.
That's what you mean, it's business time.
Where do you find these?
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's the lighter side of genocide. Because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humor, you go freaking nuts. And New Zealanders have a really whack sense of humor, to use the Gangsterland parlance. My very special guest is Ryan Dawson, otherwise known as Rise 2 Cents. And we were talking
about neocolonialism. Neocolonialism, yeah. Sorry, I jumped in the segue to sell myself. I do radio too. But yeah, I was getting at it, just saying. A lot of people like to say it's over a certain resource or something, like, or a one-size-fits-all thing. Oh, it's for the petrodollar. Oh, it's for oil or da-da-da-da. But a lot of these things, like in Mali, for example, recently, it's not just about, like, what resource the West, to paraphrase, can grab from a place. It's that the other nation doesn't get it. Because, let's say, if Iran were to be able to refine their own oil or get nuclear power so that they could free up all the oil that they're currently consuming on electricity and put it on the world market and have that surplus of cash, or any nation, pick it, whatever. You know, if Mali could do its natural gas and gold, and stop getting loans from the IMF, where they're just stuck in this perpetual debt system. If they can pay for their own infrastructure debt-free because they're selling some super resource, then they're no longer caught in the cycle of being puppets for world banks and then leasing out land and resources to multinationals, you know, who gobble up all their raw goods and make finished products and sell them back to them. And that's the system that is now in basically any country in Africa, almost everywhere in Central America, and a lot of Southeast Asia. They openly have sweatshops, virtual slavery. They don't own their own land. It's all in Indian reservations are like this too, by the way. They lease everything, these giant multinationals who are taking the rubber, the tin, the metals, the energy resources, and refining them and making products in Europe or in America or in Canada or Australia, and then selling it back. And they can't get out of debt. They've got two options. They can completely destroy their currency by just printing more money to pay off their debts, or they can sell off assets, which is what they're doing. And the projects that get appraised in these places are totally overpriced. They'll build you an electric plant, but the cost has no reflection as to what it ought to cost. But these companies know, oh, you're getting foreign aid? Well, then the price just went up to X. And the governments don't care because they personally profit. They're selling their people out. And if they don't do that, then they'll get replaced. You know, their cousin will be put in power, whatever. And that's why you always see the U.S. and Europe supporting the theocracies in Saudi Arabia, the Zionists in Israel, whatever religious crazies they can, because they're very predictable. It's easy to throw them into conflict. And they always put a target on the secular countries. Went after Libya, went after Iraq, Syria right now. Mali was one of the only real democracies in Africa. It's being
I just got a picture sent to me by Pastor Lindsay Williams of hundreds of charred and burned Christians in Nigeria.
Oh, yeah, that's been going on as well. And South Sudan as well. You'll get that. And back in 2006, that's really what turned the war around against Lebanon, is the Israelis went and bombed the Christian sections of Beirut. And then you saw a complete 180 in the media. They, wait, Christians are dying? People who count? And the PR fell apart for Israel. But in Nigeria, it doesn't matter if you're a Christian, Muslim, whatever. You're an African, you don't matter. And that's just how it is, sadly. And they do that between different Muslim sects as well. They're always supporting these Wahhabi, Salafi, jihadist, Sunni types, the Taliban types, you know. I call Al-Qaeda America's Frankenstein. Well, really, the leadership of these, there was never a full break between Al-Qaeda and the CIA. Never. It's not just blowback. These are mercenaries. I call them privateers, which is basically a secret mercenary. Same system they used to have with pirates, say. Because if a privateer gets busted, there's nothing you can do but hang them. Well, in today, they go to some torture dungeon somewhere. But the sponsors responsible have that distancing factor so that you can't really lay it on them. So the U.S. can use these rent-a-terrorists or useful idiots and attack whoever they want through proxy and not get blood on their own hands. And, well, the new direction it's going is it's going to be all mechanical. We won't even need these patsies anymore because we have these drones. And that's where you can get a mechanical killing machine to go in and shoot people at a wedding or kill kids in Pakistan or Yemen, as we've been doing. And if they shoot it down, you don't lose one single person. You just build another one and send it out. And these things can hit from miles out. It's disgusting, and it's really a dismal future if you think about it, because the more in history, the more war has become mechanized, you know, being able to drop bombs from far up in the sky, even with a manned plane or tanks, and where there's more cognitive dissonance, and there's more of a gap between the technological superpowers and the people they're attacking, where the risk has been removed. It's not like you got to go out there with a gun yourself and risk your son or something. It's the blood of your nation. Now, with drones or with these extremely high-tech artillery that can hit, you know, cruise missiles from miles away, whatever, they feel like, well, there's no risk. Will we make X amount of profit? Sure. And so they're much more willing to have wars of choice, where they can just say, well, it's only so-and-so, and we'll completely dominate them and forget about morality, and they'll just murder them. They'll murder people with sanctions. They don't think about it, and the press doesn't really write about it. They don't allow journalists in there. Look at all the things that have happened in Gaza, depleted uranium, I mean, white phosphorus. But we're not seeing the pictures like we used to. Even not so long ago with Vietnam, when someone died, it was on TV. So-and-so died today in this attack, and there were pictures of you know, people who died. Nowadays, if you even show a coffin with an American flag on it, you'll get fired. And so journalists are scared to death to cover it. Some still do, but they end up being online journalists in time because you can't show it on TV. And it's a huge problem. And the other resources war itself, you don't necessarily need to go get oil or opium or a certain thing. The Pentagon, which I call the War Department, is the largest umbrella corporation in the world. And if you look at the contracts for Lockheed Martin and Boeing and Raytheon, Northrop Grumman, and the alphabet soup of these giant aerospace companies and logistic companies, Kellogg Brown Root, Halliburton, etc., they're spending $500 billion easily on that alone. And so war is a resource in and of itself. And they'll spend millions of dollars on a couple missiles to blow up a tent or something, you know. Total overkill, because the whole purpose of war is profit to begin with. They're not really worried about the people in the tent. They just need some excuse to feed the public so they can get their war going, to justify the kind of spending they had during the Cold War, when there really was a threat with the Soviet Union, at least more than now. And they didn't want to let cash cow go, so that's why 9/11, that's the purpose of 9/11, was to restart the Cold War.
Now, can I ask you as well, war to me is, as you said, profit. However, I also think that it's debt, right? Where do they loan all this money from to buy all these weapons and things like that, you know?
Or even a war between two other parties, the U.S. will loan to both sides and provide weapons to both sides. A perpetual conflict is perpetual profit. And it totally sets nations back. I mean, we've blown people back into the Stone Age. In Iraq, we took out, I shouldn't say we, I should say the U.S. government. I sure as hell didn't do it. But the government blew up all their water treatment facilities, their agriculture, things that are not military targets. Just attacking the civilian population, they were without electricity.
Refineries, bridges, power stations, you know.
And then hired themselves to rebuild some of it. Yeah. Very slowly.
Hired Halliburton.
Yeah. Well, of course. Halliburton, you know. Cheney was the former CEO there. And Lockheed Martin, Cheney's wife, was president and still on the board of directors all the way until 2001. Yeah. So it's a revolving door.
That's what you call a country just going to Halliburton in a handbasket.
Yeah. Northrop Grumman, too, had Douglas Feith and Paul Wolfowitz work there. But what they do is they're not on the payroll as, you know, somebody with a brain that actually builds planes or anything. They're just there as a consultant, you know, kind of like Newt Gingrich getting $100,000 for his historical advice. And to be – or a lawyer, but they don't actually work on any cases. So you can put a politician on the payroll of a company by saying, oh, he gave a speech – or he's a consultant, and there are many ways of being able to pay them without having them be an official employee. And then there's a lot of insider trading, too. I mean, all these neocons heavily invest in all the companies they're about to allocate money to. Another thing that happened before Iraq was they let the Pentagon divvy out the money rather than Congress. Congress appropriated it, but the Pentagon allocated it. And, of course, they allocated it to themselves, You know, of course. And there are all of them. I've done a big chalkboard video about this. Every single department were all involved with the same industries they gave the money to. And it's an outrageous amount of money to invade a nation based on lies. These lies weren't coming from oil companies. They're coming from PNAC. I mean, we went to war in Iraq for Israel, period. I mean, the rhetoric for Iraq started in the 90s. And it was, you know, the same stuff, weapons of mass destruction, anthrax, mobile weapon labs, chemical weapons. All that stuff had already been said. All they did was re-say it again after 9/11 and it would work. But when they started saying this, same people too, Wolfowitz, Pearl, Fife, Libby, etc. When they started saying this back in the 90s, there was no euro, there was no EU, it wasn't about the petrodollar, Saddam wasn't threatening to go on the euro, whatever, it didn't even exist. They were attacking Iraq because Iraq was a threat to Israel. And all of these guys, they worked for Netanyahu. They got think tanks in Israel. Some of them work there. Paul Wolfowitz's sister is a settler. They're all involved deeply with the Knesset and the Zionists. And they come over and they're dual citizens. I mean, this is really, really obvious who lied us into war in Iraq. You can trace back each one. Miller and Sapphire and all the stuff they write in the New York Times. It was just a big triangle between a couple, you know, of their moles in the media, the INC, and the PNAC goons who were working mostly in the Defense Department or working for the Vice President under Cheney, who was one evil, evil man. But yeah, but you can't get that information out because you can't really sloganeer it the way you can by saying no war for oil or no war for X. It just wasn't that simple. And of course, oil was the motivation. But if you notice, we didn't get the oil.
What seemed to me is that the initial invasion of Iraq in the early 90s and the subsequent reinvasion of Iraq in the early 2000s seemed to me to be a military command and control tactic so that they could place military assets within the regions. I watched this documentary called The Secret Wars of Desert Storm or something like that, and a section of the film was the American intelligence trying to convince Saudi royalty that Iraqi tanks were massing on their border when they weren't. And the Saudi royalty said, show us the satellite pictures. And the Americans said, no, you're just going to have to trust us.
Right.
And they did. And now there are military bases, thanks to that big lie, permanently in Saudi Arabia, which provides a great strategic striking capacity to really anywhere in the Middle East.
That made Osama mad were the bases in Saudi Arabia. But after 9/11... they got rid of those bases that were in Mecca. They moved them out because they were going into Iraq anyway. But Iraq's right in the heart of the Middle East. It gives the U.S. a military presence there. But the first Gulf War, too, was based on lies. The whole babies on incubator speech. I'm sorry you've been over that before.
Yeah,
But at that time, the internet was just a little baby. And so if you contrast the war support for Gulf War I, with, oh, they're invading Kuwait and there's a new Hitler, because they always say everybody's Hitler. You know, everyone had their yellow ribbons and things. There were very few dissenting voices. But by the time the second war came around, overwhelmingly everybody almost was anti-war. And there were some yahoos with the American flag magnets made in China on the back of their SUVs and all, but they were a minority.
Well, you know, never underestimate the power of a small, shrill, shrieking minority, eh? You listen to the Vinny Eastwood Show. A very special guest is Ryan Dawson, Rise 2 Cents, and we'll be right back after the break at AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We're broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week. The shows are archived both at AmericanFreedomRadio.com and the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. The archives are relatively easy to find. The show survives almost solely on your donations and subscriptions. So if you do appreciate what we do here by giving a platform to commentators and people who basically have a real hard life, and let me explain something. Anybody who comes out saying what they believe to be the truth will offend both sides of every argument. It's unavoidable. If you come out saying that the left and right paradigm is false, both the lefties and the rightists will attack you. Telling the truth is something that you get very little support for. Okay, I think there was a famous quote saying that only a patriot will go through all that kind of suffering, and after he's successful, after he's actually successfully caused the revolution itself, then everybody suddenly jumps on the bandwagon because then it costs nothing to be a patriot. That's the kind of people that I like to have on this show, because those are the people that really do deserve our attention. I understand that the world has no real justice, that those who do the right thing are those who wind up being at the hands of suffering and discrimination for a good part of their lives before being accepted. I understand that. However, I have never accepted the way the world works. I have only ever sought to make it the way I want to see it. That's what the show is about. If you support that cause, please go to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, donate, or perhaps subscribe for as little as a dollar a month, just so that we can give you some nice commercial-free archives, save you heaps of listening time. I put a lot of effort into it, just so that, you know, I don't have to keep begging for cash. In fact, I don't even like doing this right now at this particular moment, because I'd rather just be talking to my very special guest, Ryan Dawson. Welcome back.
I'm going to donate after that speech. It's true, it's what you said, and it's like not just about right and left, especially those of us who dabble into conspiracies. We'll catch it from both sides too, because there's two extremes there. You'll get, on the one hand, people who don't believe in any conspiracy ever, like there's never been a covert operation by any intelligence agency ever. And that's what a conspiracy is. Any covert operation by CIA, KGB, Mossad, whatever, is a bunch of people organized, getting together, lying to everyone else, and doing something that would be otherwise considered criminal in secret. So it happens all the time. Then you have this other camp that believe practically any conspiracy they're ever given, and they are the ones who cause the stigma against everything in the middle, the legitimate things that have happened, where there are conspiracies. It's hard to get your foot in the door because of all the crazies, the Jonestowners, as I call them. You know, Alex Jones recently saying that, you know, light bulbs control your mind and stuff like that, or David Icke talking about his aliens and things. It's just total nonsense. And even when they might say something that's true once in a blue moon, because it's so polluted by all the other ridiculous stuff about Bavarians and Luciferians or whatever, it turns people off. Because, you know, very, very open-minded people might listen to that and go, okay, well, I'm just going to ignore 98% of that and try and pull out the nuggets. But like, why pull out the nuggets? Why do you have to encase things in all this infotainment stuff? And the reason they do it, I believe, and I don't think they're that sinister. Some of them just are that stupid. But I think a lot of them do it because fear sells and they need the money. Because if they didn't have it, they wouldn't be on air. And so they realize if you're a charlatan, you can make some cash.
By the way, ladies and gentlemen, be afraid, donate to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. I just had to throw that out there.
They can kill you. They can kill you with your toaster. I have the documents. They're going to put you in a FEMA camp. I mean, to this doomsday thing, the dollar's going to collapse tomorrow every day, and they're going to put you in camps and all that. And, you know, the government's really, really nasty, of course, but you know, to make up all these generic paths to nowhere doesn't resolve anything, doesn't solve anything. It's just like saying they did it without getting any names of people, industries, or specific motives and no details about 9/11 or Iraq or anything else. It's just the same kind of speech over and over again. And I just see that as a go nowhere.
Have you ever seen somebody launch like private prosecutions against alleged globalists for their alleged crimes?
Sometimes you see it, but you'd have to be reading the business press or something, you know. A lot of the Russian oligarchs, some of Putin went after them, threw some in jail. Khodorkovsky, for example, sitting in jail. Got his nose broken in jail, too. I think that's wonderful, and that happens to a billionaire. But then again, a lot of the oligarchs just fled and are living either in the UK or Israel because no one else will accept them. There's no extradition treaty. So they're just there owning their soccer teams or football teams, you might say, and living the high life. Nothing ever happens to them. But during the SNL scandal, the savings and loan scandal in the 80s, dozens and dozens of people went to jail. But it seems like the further along we go in time, the less the crooks get in any trouble. I mean, they're getting bailouts from the government. All those people engaged in fraud, I guess with the exception of Madoff, he did sometime, and Jack Abramoff. But, I mean, it's like one guy or two guys. All those people at Goldman Sachs, all those people in the Bank of America. I mean, Bank of America was going around bragging, saying they didn't receive any bailouts, even though they did take TARP money. They spent, where they got $30 billion, they spent all of it on bonuses for themselves, for administration. And the sly thing they did is Merrill Lynch and Countrywide, a couple of the financials that they took over, who were floundering and didn't get a bailout until after they merged with Bank of America. So Bank of America gobbled up his competition, and then his competition got bailouts, which really went under the umbrella of Bank of America itself. So they did get bailouts. And then to make all that, that was all the public bailouts from the government, right? To make it worse than that, we found out from Bloomberg when there was that partial audit of the Fed, there were $16 trillion divvied out to all these different institutions. And in the top three was Bank of America. I mean, they were getting money from the Fed secretly. And they had paid back what percent? None. They hadn't paid back any of it. Nothing. And that's our money. I mean, we ate that with inflation. I mean, the dollar tanked. I remember when the yen used to be 125 to the dollar. It's now 88. And it had gone down as far as 75. And the reason it went back up is because of the natural disasters in Japan and Shinzo Abe and their own stupidity. But, yeah, I mean, all these currencies are in free fall, and it's everywhere. And you rarely see prosecutions, rarely. If they do go to jail, like Bernard Carrick went to jail for fraud. He had a role in 9/11. He was a police chief there. He's the guy that said they found an unburned passport, and the one who denied, you know, this. He said they arrested.
Yeah, he's like walking around in knee-high pulverized dust, and he goes, oh, there's a passport underneath here. That's remarkably
That was the second one they found. They found Al Jarrah, whose cousin ended up being busted a year later in Lebanon as a spy for Israel. But they found Jarrah's passport in Pennsylvania.
I mean, that was speaking of which, I really wanted to one thing I did want to talk with you today is actually reiterate the conversation we had last night, because I was asking you questions about the plane hitting the Pentagon, and I was like, where's the wreckage, where's this, that, and that, and the other. And then in your documentary, I think back what was it, about the 1 hour 20 mark, and I'll put the link up on the website for you as well, because I think it was spectacular. You actually did show the pictures that they showed on other conspiracy documentaries about the plane hitting, and they obscured the bottom 100 foot of the Pentagon that was completely taken out by the wings, which went through it like a hot knife through butter and stuff like that. And they obscured and didn't put in the pictures of
it,
all
the
landing gear
too.
That they found, the engines.
Nothing.
That they found, the
they're
DNA
like,
of the passengers.
Yeah, they were just like, Loose Change made these claims. I didn't see the final cut. I wasn't going to stomach it. But in the first couple of movies, which were promoted like Coney 2012 or Free Tibet or any of these movies, you had this hyper push behind it. And this is before Facebook or YouTube even. And, you know, I got a DVD in the mail, right? What is this? You know, and I watched it and I was just laughing. You know, I'm like, oh, this is a joke, right? And it just exploded. But they made ridiculous claims in there. I mean, saying like a plane fit into an 18-foot hole. And they just completely, you know, sort of gerrymandered the pictures, made sure there was either water spraying underneath or a truck parked below, and they zoomed in on the second floor.
Or huge amounts of smoke obscuring it.
Yeah, exactly. They never showed you the first floor, which is where the plane hit, except for the, you know, the tip of the tail or whatever. They never showed that. And they're like, well, there weren't, you know, plane parts outside. So and so this one journalist said or whatever. I'm like, that's because the plane's inside the building, and I know he didn't go in there because it's still on fire. But there's this massive hole in the Pentagon, and there were parts of the plane still all over the place. The landing gear made the punch-out hole in the C-ring. And that's another misleading thing they say is that the plane had to go through all these rings. And that's not true. That was the upper floors. The bottom floor was clean through. It only had the two walls to go through. Enter one and exit the next. That's it.
Now, Ryan, can you please just plug that documentary as well? We've come to the end of the hour here, so I'd like you to actually plug that so you can go and watch it.
War by Deception. The old film's on warbydeception.com. I'll get the new one up there later today. Just go to Rise 2 Cents, or just Google 9/11 Ryan Dawson. You'll find it.
All right. Ryan Dawson, ladies and gentlemen.
There you go.
All right, thanks, bro. And also, resend me that link as well, and I'll pop it up on the archives of the show today.
Okay. Yeah, thanks.
Right. Cheers, bro. You too, man, because you've got a day job, unlike a lot of us, and you've got to go do it. All right, see you later, man, and see you next hour, ladies and gentlemen. James Robert Wright from the Council of the Freemasons. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is now hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Archives in high quality and with pictures of the guests and video versions of the shows are all there on the homepage and in the archive sections, and also available commercial free for subscribers and donators at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. So if you want to be able to see and hear rather than just listen, you've got the options. But I have noticed, and my very good friend Mitch Santel has told me this, sometimes this show is much better when you're just listening to it. I thought that was a very profound realization. My very special guest is James Wright, James Robert Wright from Occupy Freemasonry, who has written a book about the secrets and ritual and cult abuses within Freemasonry. Welcome to the program, James.
Thank you, Vinny. Always a pleasure to hang out with you.
Never a chore, I hope.
No.
Mm. Now, you sent me a video this morning. For those of you who are unaware, I don't know if you've ever seen the movie, what's it called, American Beauty, where he leads the girl into his dad's room sort of thing, and he unlocks the cabinet, and he brings out this this china plate. He flips it over, and it's got like a Nazi symbol on it, and he goes, it's official state china of the Third Reich. There's a whole subculture of people who collect this Nazi stuff. There's actually official China of Freemasonry, isn't there, James? And
yes.
Quite rare, too. And you wound up smashing a few of them on your video today.
Yeah, it just, you know, it seemed like something apropos to do. I don't know. Get a little bit of the tension out from being hidden out in the mountains, I guess you could say. So,
did it relieve some of the tension? Because I remember seeing on the news a number of years ago, I believe, there were actually these bars that were opening up in Japan, I think, who would give people stacks of plates, and they'd go into a cubicle and they'd be able to smash them, and they found it really, really quite therapeutic. Did you find this to be the case?
Yes, it was. I mean, you know, I bought that china like most upper-level Masons did from the gift shop when I worked there. And, you know, it graced my breakfast table for a couple years. And, you know, it was in storage, and I was digging through some things and came across it. And I thought, you know what? I don't want this. I don't want to see it. I don't want to own it. And so I did the most appropriate thing I thought I could do with it, which was smash it into a million pieces, just like they have smashed the control of this planet into a million pieces in regards to democratic means. So, you know, I hope it's a metaphor for the future, because as each of those plates broke with the pictures of their eagle and cathedral on them, you know, that's sort of what I see happening to the order itself. So, you know, and it's just my little bit of dark humor. So,
you don't have really much of a choice in your position as well, because we've had a number of conversations off air, and this fight is actually really, really weighing on you. And I wanted people to know that you're not coming through this in just a an easy kind of, ha-ha, I'm exposed in the Freemasons kind of way. You're actually in real danger, and it's actually causing real trauma upon you just in your daily life.
Yeah, it's weird to me, because I've actually lost friends who I guess really weren't friends to begin with, you know, from jealousy, thinking that now I'm doing something that's they perceive to be glitzy, and you know, that I'm getting all this fanfare and everything, and I'm not, and it isn't, and I don't. And it's like, would you rather trade places? I'll take your happy normal life, you know. But I believe in what I'm doing, so I'm going to continue doing it, and there's no stopping me except by the most extreme means possible. And, you know, they've already demonstrated that they're capable of anything, so I have to be extremely vigilant. You know, I was talking with another truther host the other day, and he was asking me, you know, what is it like? And, well, I'll tell you exactly what it's like. I've been living out of a bloody suitcase since the book hit store shelves. I've moved 5 times across country and back, circling the entire state of Texas in the meantime. It's not fun. And, you know, just 2 weeks ago, or 3 weeks ago now, about 6 death threats came in just over one night. And I woke up to it, which is nothing new. And so, you know, I called the FBI agent in charge of my case, and he goes, well, because it came through on the lines in this town that you're in, you know, go to the sheriff's department there and file a report there as well. Okay. So I went and did that, and I sit down with the, you know, lieutenant or whoever the guy in charge was at the sheriff's department where I'm at, and I begin the deposition, and the first thing he does is stop me, and he goes, well, you know, I'm a 32nd degree Mason from the Valley of San Antonio. And I said, okay, well, I mean, thank you for being forthcoming with that, but I'm going to need, you know, other witnesses in this room for this deposition. And he obliged, but then I didn't hear anything for a week, and I called him up, and he said, with a rather haughty attitude, I think, you know, I sent the case back to that FBI agent of yours in Dallas, call him. And so, in other words, it was basically, you know, no, I don't want to touch this with a 10-foot pole, and we're talking about a small mountain town's sheriff's department that has absolutely nothing to do at the moment. So you can't tell me that, you know, it was placed on a back burner or just conveniently fell through the crack. No, that was absolutely deliberate. He pretty much said it without saying, you know what I mean? It's just, it goes to show once again the level that they stoop to. And I'm sure he's had a phone call himself now, and I'm sure they now know where I am. Fortunately, where I am is on a very large, well-protected ranch with very good friends that care a lot about me. So, you know, it's crazy. It really is. I would like to be able to settle down more and not look over my shoulder so much. But, you know, if you want to do what I'm doing, then I guess you've got to suffer and that's part of it. And I've accepted that, and it's basically a day-to-day how much or how little do you struggle in this sort of business. Because, I mean, they're maniacal. And, this morning I watched the video you posted of the City Hall meeting there in Auckland where your lovely Masonic mayor gets up and storms out. And I watched that, and I thought to myself, I've seen this 1,000 times before of a Mason who doesn't like someone else expressing their point of view, gets up and saunters out of the room in that same exact way. I mean, it's like they're all tied to one brain. I swear, it's crazy to me. It's crazy and comical and sad all at the same time.
And the same process is followed in the United Nations when Ahmadinejad gets up and talks about how 9/11 was an inside job, and Israel and the United States leave the room.
Yes. Oh, and the COINTELPRO is through the roof. I wasn't even aware. Freighter told me about a week ago. He was surfing the net one night. We were chatting back and forth in Skype. And he goes, I'm looking at your webpage, but this doesn't look like your webpage should. And I'm like, what are you talking about? So he sent me a direct link. And as it turns out, you, Vincent Eastwood, who helped me set up that page, Occupy Freemasonry on Facebook, one word, 1 month after that page was created last year, the Masons, went and created Occupy Space Freemasonry. So in the hopes that whenever I give out the address on air, you know, it deters people to that one. And it's basically a Masonry is really cool and interesting, you know, type of site. So, and that's just their classic tactics. So, you know, it's little things like that every day, something else, you know, and they're being awfully quiet right now because the last time they rang me up, I told them that I would be attending my Masonic trial, even though they still have yet to set a date, and I would be bringing a private security detail and members of the press with me, and now they've gone totally silent again. So that's sort of where all that is right now. I'm sure they're doing double backflips because their rights to the call themselves Knight Templars have been revoked, as you know. So there's a lot of things not going their way right now. So if we could get a good hack from Anonymous and maybe a few people to chain themselves to the front doors of the Supreme Council, I'll go first in D.C., you know, start to occupy physically there. Whatever it takes. I mean, they've got to come down because, like your previous guest was talking about, so many relevant things, and, you know, we're headed for a third world war, and this all goes back to the Scottish Rite. Albert Pike planned all this out. It's not a conspiracy theory. All anyone has to do is Google Albert Pike, three world wars, and if you have never seen this, your jaw will probably hit your desk. So,
could you elaborate on that?
Yes, it was written, which now Albert Pike, you know, was the only Confederate general who mysteriously escaped any sort of prosecution or whatever after the Civil War here. And so in the year 1871, he writes this letter, and it describes the First and Second World Wars in 1871, exactly as they happened. And then it goes on to talk about the Third World War. And I can read it here, you know, quote it if you'd like. It says, "The Third World War must be fomented by taking advantage of the differences caused by the agentur of the Illuminati between the political Zionists and the leaders of the Islamic world. The war must be conducted in such a way that Islam and political Zionism, the State of Israel, mutually destroy each other. Meanwhile, the other nations, once more divided on this issue, will be constrained to fight to the point of complete physical, moral, spiritual, and economical exhaustion. We shall unleash the nihilists and the atheists, and we shall provoke a formidable social cataclysm, which in all its horror will show clearly to the nations the effect of absolute atheism, origin of savagery, and of the most bloody turmoil. Then everywhere, the citizens, obliged to defend themselves against the world minority of revolutionaries, will exterminate those destroyers of civilization, and the multitude, disillusioned with Christianity, whose deistic spirits will from that moment be without compass or direction, anxious for an ideal, but without knowing where to render its adoration, will receive the true light through the universal manifestation of the pure doctrine of Lucifer, finally brought out in the public view. This manifestation will result from the general reactionary movement which will follow the destruction of Christianity and atheism, both conquered and exterminated at the same time.
How is Albert Pike viewed by Freemasonry? Is he viewed as a prophet, a messiah, a savior, or something of that nature?
He is viewed as the father of the Scottish Rite, the great reformer of it, who rewrote all the degrees 4 through 32 and the 33rd. And he also wrote the ritual in a unrelated story to the Ku Klux Klan. Not a nice guy, for sure. And, you know, when you read the full body of this letter, the First World War, the Second, I mean, it was all prescribed by him, by them, the Scottish Rite. And that's why, you know, the Scottish Rite in Albert Pike's time was in the state of South Carolina. He was instrumental in getting it moved to across the street from the White House.
So I had a theory that those of strong religious belief that are in positions of power will, instead of allowing things that are prophecies to come true, are instead becoming impatient and will make those predictions come true themselves.
Absolutely.
To convince others, really, of the worthiness of their cause.
Well, and not just that, but, you know, they want absolute power and domination. And like we've talked about before, both on air and off, you know, you know how frustrated I get when people start going on these phantom Scooby-Doo chases of masked, shadowy Illuminati, quote-unquote, figures and all this kind of stuff, when it's so simple. It's all hiding in plain sight at that Supreme Council, you know? And this is where it all goes back to. And I guarantee you, all those men on that Supreme Council in D.C. all have ties or stock holdings or whatever in this global war machine. So they have a lot invested in mind control. We've talked about that before, too, out of Stanford Research International since the 70s. You know, the Soviets are into it, as they say, but, you know, nobody ever asked the question, how is it that these Scottish Rite characters in Washington, D.C. can walk, like, through walls and between raindrops into all these countries and you know, it's just so blatantly obvious. And so that's why I'm still, you know, on my soapbox with this message of everybody really, really needs to shift their focus for a moment, because you won't go straight to the evildoers. That's them. And
so are you saying, in essence, a lot of people have talked about the Illuminati, but very few people can point fingers as to who they actually are? Are you saying that the Supreme Council of the 33rd degree of Freemasonry essentially are the Illuminati?
Yes. Plain and simple. Absolutely. Yes, they are. The Illuminati has become a 21st century pop culture catch-all phrase that helps.
Can I interrupt here, because we're coming into break, and it's interesting that you mention a 21st century pop culture, because I just watched an episode of The Cleveland Show from the maker of Family Guy. Yes. The episode is called The Hip-Hop Illuminati.
Okay? Oh, yeah. There is,
they've got this big rap song and stuff like that, and that they say that they control all the culture, and one of the lyrics of the rap song when they're explaining who they are is the hip-hop Illuminati. We've got more secrets than the Freemasons, and they're doing this on a black and white tiled floor in this giant mansion with these secret books and stuff like that. I was just sitting there, me and Sarah just cracking up laughing, you know? You're kind of putting it in your face, y'all!
We'll be right back after the break at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com with James Wright, formerly of the Supreme Council of the City Citizens.
Look at me, driving and I won't stop. Welcome and back. It feels so good to be alive and on top.
Welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, ladies and gentlemen. It is the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness and Illuminati scumbaggery, if you lose your sense of humor, you'll go freaking nuts. I was talking with James over the break about the former mayor of Auckland, Mr. John Archibald Banks, the Right Honourable John Archibald Banks, who is incidentally a high-level Freemason.
Of course.
And two things. James watched a video the other night of that I reposted off of my old channel of him walking out on a council meeting because we were exposing a bit of corruption and speaking and that kind of thing. So they all just got up and left. Apparently, that's just Freemasonry 101. You know, just get up and leave if you don't want to listen. And also, just very recently, I think yesterday, I believe, one of my Facebook friends sent me a video that he took. I think it's only about 90 seconds or so of Right Honourable John Archibald Banks parallel parking across two parking spaces. Right? Okay. You know, just parking diagonally, because he's just so awesome that he feels he deserves two parking spaces. And when called on it and filmed on it, he goes, "What business is it of yours?" You know, he just gets in his car and drives off. Person gives him a bit of abuse and stuff, as he well should, as I've done myself. And what was funny is that video of him parking across these two parking spaces reminded me of what the Right Honourable John Archibald Banks, his very first decree when he was elected as the Lord Mayor of Auckland was to widen his mayoral parking space so that it would fit his Bentley. You can't make this stuff up. All right, it gave me an idea of a prank that we should do. You know how right next to supermarkets and all of that kind of stuff, they've got those little disabled parking spaces. You know, they're like yellow lines with a little kind of wheelchair sort of symbol in the middle. Black spray paint over that wheelchair and the thing that says disabled only, and instead put up a sign or spray paint it on a nice beautiful compass and square and say Freemasons only. And just see how many Masons will actually do and take that off. You know, it's just like, look, I'm a member of the 33rd Council of the Sigma. I have my Masonic disabled parking space pass. I have the authority.
Yes, and I do what I want. Uh-huh. That's the attitude, and you can always tell their cars apart anyway because the back of the boot's always loaded up with all those decals. So, very easy to spot.
What kind of decals are we talking about? The compass and square decals, yeah?
Oh, yeah, that one, or they'll do the Red Cross for the York Rite, or they'll do the double-headed eagle for the Scottish Rite, and there's probably two dozen different ones, and some Masons will have all two dozen on the back of their cars. Because,
they're so proud of being Mason, man.
Well, I mean, actually, it's one of the ways that they get out of a lot of their traffic tickets. So, because even if the cop isn't a Mason, he usually, it's like a reverse intimidation thing, you know. You never know who this person could be, and the nicer the car, you know, the cop will get really scared because they control them, not directly, not 100%, but as much as they can through that Sentinel program I told you all about. So,
well, because it's not like there's a Freemason dispatch or something like that. You know, I want to report a crime. No problem, brother. We'll send somebody out to your location within 20 minutes.
They actually, if they wanted to do that, they could. They have that capability with Sentinel. So, let's say a bad public relations incident takes place, you know, or something, and all hell breaks loose, then they pull up that database and they locate all of the media personnel, police personnel, everything in that locality, and start making phone calls. Do damage control as quickly as possible. Kind of like when, you know, the night Diana died and the night that Benazir Bhutto was blown up in her car. And the very first thing they do is come in with detergent and spray away all the forensic evidence. So that's what they do. They're professional damage controllers.
Which is incidentally because they cause a lot of the damage. So they control the damage that's caused, and they also conduct damage control after it.
Ah, yeah. Perhaps that's why their motto over at the Scottish Rite is order out of chaos.
The old auto ab KO. And also, I wanted to think on and ponder on this for a moment. Anarchy is not chaos. Have you heard that? Like, it simply means an absence of rulers, not an absence of rules. It's not totally out of control. Whereas Freemasonry is the direct antithesis to anarchism. It's about as much control as they can conceivably exert. That's how much they want right now. And always striving for more.
Absolutely. That has never stopped. And, you know, I wouldn't say that it's as bad now as it was in, say, 1950 to 1985. But, you know, I mean, if they're allowed to keep getting away with selling the public on the History Channel that they're just so wonderful and docile and kind and loving and sweet, huggable, lovable, kissable, no. No, these are men who would just assume tear off your face and throw it on the ground and stomp on it, then, you know, defer to you for anything. They want statues bronzed of themselves and their paintings hung on the walls that have rooms in these Scottish Rite buildings named after them. That is always the goal. Immortality. Power. So, it's quite a struggle. I mean, when you're up against these people and they invoke that network of theirs, you know, it's quite difficult. Fortunately, there is a large network of truthers and patriots at an ever-growing rate. So, you know, if they want a revolution, they're going to have one. And eventually, whatever shape or form or fashion that revolution takes, whether it's peaceful, whether people are tumping over cars in the streets with bearing torches, you know, who knows? We can't predict that. But what we can predict is that sooner or later, all this stuff that's been done in the dark will come out into the light. And by which I mean the dirty dealings of the Supreme Council, their Vatican ties, all of this world banking, you know, malfeasance. It's all going to come out sooner or later. The truth always does. So, yes, I would just plead with everyone that, you know, don't believe everything you hear on the internet, especially these conspiracy blog sites that claim, you know, oh, no, it's all the Bilderbergers' fault. It's all the Council on Foreign Relations' fault, blah, blah. No, ask yourself this question. Why is it that any pick, like, let's use David Icke's as an example, his forum that he doesn't really even moderate. Why is it that all these Masons who swear up and down that they don't acknowledge that that's just trashy conspiracy theory, we don't do that, that's nonsense, then why are they always on these sites trying to control the flow of information if their official statement is they don't believe in it? Why? Because they're paid to do it. They are disinformation agents. They have tons of them that work IT jobs and, you know, between tasks, hop on these sites and try to make Freemasonry sound like it's the good guys. And nothing could be further from the truth. That is completely backwards. So, you know, and then all, you have all these books that are out about the Freemasons. But if they were actually written by Freemasons, they were written in a manner to make, you know, the craft look good so that they hope themselves to get awarded that 33rd degree from having done something to promote the craft from a public relations standpoint. So, you know, it's basically you sell out from the moment you're initiated. That it's strict obedience from that very first moment in the order. And if you sidestep them so much as once, you know, your future there going up in titles or whatever will be seriously damaged.
And how much criticism are you receiving from just general Freemasons who maybe even haven't even been to a lodge in like 10, 15 years or whatever, just coming out and calling you crazy or calling you a fraud or questioning what you do, that kind of thing. Is this a common factor now?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's been all kinds of stories that they've tried to put out about me saying that, you know, I was fired for being a bad employee and now I'm bearing a grudge and all this kind of stuff. But no, if that were true, then why have they not come out and attacked me with it, with real evidence? Why am I a nonfiction author that cannot be sued for libel or slander? Ah, because the legal department over at New Falcon Publications has had all that evidence put in their hands so they could publish the book and not get sued. That's why I named names in it. It all stems from empirical evidence. So, you know, like when I talk about the mind control, I'm quoting their own documents. So, this is so real. It just, you know, it baffles me how we haven't come together to organize against this kind of tyranny earlier. But, you know, better late than never. So,
and what would you say to those initiates who have who criticized you and refused to look at the evidence itself?
I would say to them that they have never spent a night inside of a Scottish Rite building. Plain and simple.
There's many different rites, are there not? York Rite and Shriners and what have you?
Oh, yeah, but the Scottish Rite's been trying to systematically bankrupt all those different factions for 150 years. And they're finally, in the last 10 years, getting very successful at it. The York Rite is failing. A lot of blue lodges under the York Rite are closing down or merging together to stay alive. The Mystic Shrine is also failing. Now they're just offering that degree at the shrine for free. If you're a Master Mason, you know, go ahead. It's free. Just please pay us dues afterward. And I mean, it's all been centralized, kind of like how governments have been centralizing their power. Freemasonry has been centralizing its power, and it's all now at the Scottish Rite. That's why the night that you're made a Master Mason, they come at you, back you into a corner, and say you're doing Scottish Rite next, because that's the way it goes now.
So they've essentially positioned themselves as the capstone.
Yes, and what's ironic about it, I guess, is like Frater says, you know, how the Scottish Rite characters will sit off to the side of the Blue Lodge rooms and totally control everything that's going on, not the people there in the Blue Lodges. And I, you know, it's not 100% black or white thing. Some lodges are susceptible, some aren't. If, like a lodge in Dallas, I guarantee you it is. They always show up for those neighborhood lodge meetings and tell them how to conduct them and where to send all the money to. So, you know, like, just as an example, in Dallas, the real big public relations backup plan is the Scottish Rite Hospital for Children, which is a really great hospital because you can take, you know, a child there and receive totally free medical service. It's an excellent concept. But that Scottish Rite part is in name only. I guarantee you, I used to work for the executive board that managed the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry. They have no ownership or management of that. You have a few old timers left who, you know, might have a couple seats on the board. But that's it. and they'll go over there every couple months or whatever and try to pressure all the doctors that are there into becoming Masons, and they're basically met with, like, F off, you know. We're here to do a job. We're not interested in your cult. And then they tuck their tails and they go back to their cathedral and continue on with their perverse rituals with dead bodies and secret gay sects and all the rest of it.
Now, I spoke to a friend of mine who's involved with a charity here in New Zealand that's actually supported by Freemasons, and he said to me that they do get different donors and organizations that actually support this particular charity in which he works, and all of those organizations that donate make a big deal of it. Like they have ceremonies, or they will advertise, or they will have decals or something of that nature to advertise that, yes, we support this charity. Whereas the Freemasons simply pass you a check and nothing's said.
Yes.
I thought that was quite interesting. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going
to say. In fact, we're about to go to break. Like, we've got like 10 seconds or something if you want to sum it up.
Yeah, one of the guys I used to work with there was a retired former head of IBM. So, yeah. And so who would donate all the computers for the building, for the offices? IBM.
How interesting. Also, I am very cognizant that there's a lot of Christians out there who are deathly afraid of Muslims. The antithesis to being Christian isn't Muslims. It's actually Satanists, isn't it? Which the Freemasons certainly seem to support. We'll be right back and discuss more of that after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com.
I take my anger to a place that ain't gonna get up in your face. The facts we okay, but the system fails. We got to change the way we see the problem. We're gonna fix this place. My living soul don't care about the color of your face. Unite and roll, respect our right to live here on the land. It's Dino Ranga, Tita Tonga. We don't own the banks. The parliament does so. So where do you have a stand?
Welcome back.
Off your back with hefty tax demands. Misleading.
Welcome back to the Vinny Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week, exposing scumbaggery. Like a flasher exposes himself on a daily basis. My very special guest is James Robert Wright, formerly of the Supreme Council of the 33rd Degree. And I've been getting a lot of emails, James, about Christians saying that they should fear Muslims and the invasion of the United States and all of this kind of thing. And I just think Muslims are not the threat to Christianity. The Quran says that Jesus is one of God's prophets and things of that nature. And the real threat...
It's actually when the Templars conquered Jerusalem, they trained the Islamists there at the time, and they called them the hashish, because that was an old Templar battle tactic, was to give their men hashish before battle to promote the feeling of invincibility. So there was actually a time when Christians and Muslims walked hand in hand, and that was largely thanks to the Templars. So, you know, the Vatican sure did away with all that.
Mm. Now, could we...
And now,
Oh, sorry.
Go ahead. No, I was just going to say, you know, the boogeyman has been made out to be all these different things, and who has been writing the policy on all this all along the Scottish Rite? You yourself even have a... Like I was talking about David Icke's forum, why are there always Masons trying to control information in these online forums? You yourself have one trying to do that in yours. And this is not the first time. And that's just their battle tactics.
You talked about the mind control. You said that if they're not there deliberately and being paid, they're simply suffering under the mind control that they really have implanted on their minds through their initiation ceremonies and things of that nature. And it's basically like a cognitive dissonance thing. They come out and attack because they're simply not comfortable with the fact that they've lived their entire life as a lie.
Oh, yeah, no, and I'm very sympathetic to that, believe it or not, because I went through that myself. When my entire concept of what Freemasonry was smashed, kind of like those plates in the video, I went through a severe depression because it was my life, and to get to the top and to figure out it's all a lie, that it's all evil, corrupted, sick, disgusting, I'm going to have to prostitute myself to keep my job, you know, I mean, it just tore my world in half. So I understand that when these guys are faced with these facts, provable facts, that they have never witnessed themselves because they're not that high of a rank, you know, the knee-jerk reaction is pretty violent. So
what was it? The three stages of truth. First, they ridicule you. Secondly, they violently oppose you. And third, they accept the truth as self-evident.
Yes, and there are a large group of Masons that have actually taken the time to read my book and have been amazingly very supportive and cheered me on and said, absolutely, and the place needs to be overhauled. You know, we need transparency. We need all of these corrupt guys who are digging their nails into their big oak chairs, you know, removed, because they're just turning it into a total dominating death cult behind the scenes in politics. And it oh my God, Vinny, we have to do something. This is really scary subject matter. I mean, just the way I'm having to live right now alone is enough to make a person crazy. So, you know, I have to take it a day at a time and keep a sense of humor about it. Otherwise, I'd go freaking nuts, as you say. So, yeah, and, you know, people think that, like you said earlier, I'm sitting back laughing this all off or whatever. No. No, it's very, very sad. It's something that I was born into, I was pushed into doing, I did it, I was good at it, and then found out it was all a lie and a sham, and it really challenged my beliefs. So,
now, I've said for a long time that the reason people become activists, in a sense, is usually out of two factors. One, meaning they've got a family that's involved in activism and it's inevitable. And the second being they're really talented and intelligent and they get really successful, only to find out at some point, after usually suffering some massive trauma, that everything that they'd based their life on simply wasn't true. And they spend the rest of their life trying to correct that mistake, almost like they have to pay for their own initial ignorance.
Yes, and, you're absolutely
you know,
right.
Same for me, bro. You know, I don't know about you, how you feel about yourself, but I constantly look back on things that I've done in my life and kind of look down on myself and just think, Vinny, how could you have been so stupid?
Well, that's part of growing and changing. I mean, we're the same age, so I totally understand what you're saying. I certainly don't act on impulses now like I would have at 21 or, you know, whatever. So, yeah, you know, that's part of the human condition and the learning process. But unfortunately, there's some in this world who take it to a really, really dark place. And actually, I've watched several of your interviews, I hope you know, and one that really stood out to me was when you interviewed Tila Tequila. Everything she said, it is exactly a parallel to everything I've experienced, so she has to be telling the truth, because there's no way for her to know that if she had not gone through it. So I definitely think that's something people should check out. I myself would love to speak with her and just compare war stories. You know, so very real. And like you said, we would each be that type that got into a very successful point, only to figure out that you were going to have to basically sell your soul, so to speak, to continue. And when a lot of people choose to do it, there's the few of us that choose hell no. So, and here we all are.
Well, I don't know what to say, James, because the world is a really shockingly, well, I don't want to use the word shockingly, I want to use curse words kind of place. And the fact of the matter is, almost everything that everybody's been brought up to believe their entire life, I don't care what country you're living in, I don't care what your line of work is, almost everything that we're doing right now is based on a lie. And I operate under the assumption that what I'm doing is probably wrong, just in the hope that maybe something will happen or somebody will inform me of something that I don't already know and that I can change it and become slightly more correct as time goes on while still knowing that I'm still wrong. You know what I'm saying? Like, you living life as a perennial student, as a dude. Well,
they're getting so desperate now that they're trying to indoctrinate children as young as possible. Just case in point, that new music video for Kesha for Die Young, and there's been conspiracy theorists that say it has to do with the Sandy Hook shooting. No. It is a full-blown Masonic initiation. Watch the video. And, you know, they're trying to get this stuff into the heads of kids as young as possible. It's a last-ditch effort. They're worried about how is their order going to still be functioning in the next 20 to 30 years? Because they know they've made mistakes. They know that they've been outed. And they don't know how to clean up because everything is different this time. This is not 1826 Morgan affair in America when, you know, a generation died off and it was all forgotten about. This is an information age. You cannot delete this information. So, you know, I encourage people to go to my site again, not the COINTELPRO version site, but facebook.com/Occupy Freemasonry, one word. And, you know, again, thank you, Vinny, for helping me with that, because you know that I'm technically still learning. So, and anything, you know, if people can donate, that's fantastic. Obviously, my life is extremely difficult right now. Like I said, I'm living out of a suitcase. I'm constantly on the move, always having to look over my shoulder. It's not fun. And it's cost me everything. I've lost, you know, a wonderful house in Dallas. I've lost almost everything I own from having to flee. You know, I'm almost kind of like a storm victim or something. Like, where's the Red Cross, you know?
Hey, well, I think it's on the York Right building.
Yeah,
right now. Anyway, yep, James, you're obviously a fraud because you've lost everything, you know. All right, well, thanks, man, for coming on the show today at such short notice. And I hope my mate Dan hears this, because I had a little bit of an argument with him last night about perception versus reality. And actually, he really loves you, your content, James. So I actually wanted to bring you on for his sake, really more than anything. And so thank you for obliging. And Occupy Freemasonry, ladies and gentlemen, facebook.com/Occupy Freemasonry. Please go to the archives and or donate at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. We'll see you again sometime.